I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly Shape Up at the Barbershop, where the guys talk about the news and whatever's on their minds. Freelance writer Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, media executive Nick Charles are in the shop, and we welcome a new guy, Congressman Keith Ellison, who represents Minnesota's 5th District. Ruben Navarrete will be back in the shop next week. Hey, Jimmy, what's up?
Hey, Michelle. Hey, fellas. What's up? Welcome to the shop. How we doing?
How you doing,
what's
man?
Up, man?
Things are going good.
All right. Well,
I
you know
a line
what?
On the back right up in here.
Well, my man, check this out. Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama call a truce in the midst of the comments about race, blaming overzealous supporters for the dust-up. Now, one of them, Robert Johnson, issued an apology to Obama yesterday, saying that, you know, comments he'd made had been misconstrued to allude to possible drug use, you know, that Obama talks about in his book. You know, he apologized.
Would anybody like to hear what he actually said, just so everybody knows what we're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay, here it is.
Drop it.
That the Obama campaign would imply that we are so stupid that we would think Hillary and Bill Clinton, who have been deeply and emotionally involved in black issues, when Barack Obama was doing something in the neighborhood that I won't say what he was doing, but he said it in his book. And to expect us now all of a sudden to say we are attacking a black man, I mean, that kind of campaign behavior does not resonate with me for a guy who says I want to be a reasonable, likable Sidney Poitier, guess who's coming to dinner.
So there you have
Man.
It. That's
Why does
what
it sound
said?
Like somebody spiked his punch? I mean, you know what? Special K, welcome to the barbershop.
How you doing,
bro? Is this a piece that's going to last between the Clintons and Barack Obama?
Well, they've already called their truce. They've already started making nice. And, you know, I'm glad that they did because the truth is that's not where the heart of this thing is all about. The heart of this thing is about, do we want a new direction for the country or do we want same old thing?
Can I throw out one thing? Oh, Nick, I want to hear from you on this because I know you got something, you got some place to go. But I'm sorry Ruben's not here because we've been emailing about this all week. And he says, you know what, maybe I'm not so ready to move on. You know, maybe I'm not so ready to move on. He wrote a column saying, you know, this is an example about how, you know, white Republicans aren't the only people who might need to do some sensitivity training around some of these issues. And he said, I'll give an example. You know, Ruben can be kind of rough. But Ruben says that it just seems to him that some people are taking the liberty of telling minorities when we're supposed to be offended and for how long. And even at the same time that they hate the division. And he personally thinks that maybe this is a good opportunity for people to actually understand what it is that people were upset about. So I don't know. Nick?
You know, I totally agreed to some extent with Ruben in that, you know, race permeates every part of our life in America. And why should it not permeate the Democratic campaign for the nomination? And my thing about this is, you know, we sat here, I guess, weeks ago talking about, you know, what's to come when Obama won Iowa. And I said, look, the Clintons are going to pull out everything they can because they're political survivalists. No matter what, they're going to survive. And if it takes surrogates, if it takes innuendo, if it takes whispers, and if it takes bringing up race, which is an issue, if people act as though it's not an issue anymore, it still is an issue. And going forward, it will still be an issue, whether he wins, she wins, whoever faces the Republican nominee. And, you know, my thing is, I don't think I'm ready to move on either because I want to know, you know, not so much about the surrogates, but the candidates themselves. I think the Clintons get a pass. The whole thing with Bill Clinton being the first black president,
right,
et cetera, they get a pass.
Mm-hmm.
And the sad thing about it is that no one, white or black or any other creed or color, should get a pass about talking about race or not talking about race.
Well, yeah, and I think, you know, first of all, you know, I'm going to go on record and say, first of all, there's nothing black about Hillary Clinton. Bill Clinton may have been the first black president, but, I mean, what Bob Johnson did was take a cheap political potshot. And unfortunately, it seems as though the Democratic debate has sort of devolved into gutter politics where, you know, people can, you know, the Obama is a Muslim thing, you know, all these sorts of things, even though they're seen as being said casually or in a passing manner. You had former Senator Bob Kerry, you know, a Clinton supporter, you know, making innuendo about his Muslim lineage and stuff. And I agree with everyone. I think that, you know, nobody should be immune from criticism when they do something like
that. Well, but in fairness to the other side of it, because I think you're an Obama supporter, Arsalan, and Congressman Olson, do I have it right that you're an Obama supporter too? So just in fairness to the Clintons, their argument is that, you know, that the Obama side were also taking cheap shots. It was clear that she wasn't trying to diminish Martin Luther King, and, you know, they ran with that ball too. Do want to ask you, Congressman, how you're taking this whole blog, what do you want to call it, like a sort of this blog campaign to say that Obama is a Muslim when he's been very clear that he is not. I mean, his stepfather, well, his father is from Kenya, as everybody knows. He's a member of the Luo tribe and so forth like this. And his stepfather is from Indonesia. And you're a Muslim. I think you're I think you're the first Muslim to serve in the U.S. Congress.
I'll be the first forever, but I will not be the only for long because Andre Carson from Indiana is coming on strong, strong, strong. But let me just tell you, I think it's just them trying to smear him and appeal to people's bigotry. But I'm going to tell you, I don't think people are as dumb or nasty as they think they are. And I think that, you know, Obama should stand up and say, you know, I'm a proud member of my church. And yeah, my dad's a Muslim and so is my stepfather. But so what? People get to be Muslim in America. Last time I heard, we had freedom of religion. And, you know, I think that, you know, it's really going to backfire on them. If Obama has some connection to the Muslim world, that America's going to be better off for it.
First, just to tie one more bow on this whole cheap shot thing, the other thing that I think the Clinton supporters, I don't know if it was Hillary Clinton herself or talking about, is that there was an earlier debate where she was asked about the likability factor. And we talked about this in the shop, I think, a week or so ago, where he says, hey, you know, you're all right. You know, you're plenty likable. And some folks were interpreting that as him kind of taking a little dig at her. Well, he tried to clean that up, too, as, you know, speaking that, you know, letting the healing begin. And here's a short clip of that.
Well, I absolutely regret it because that wasn't how it was intended. I mean, folks were giving Hillary a hard time about likability, and my intention was to say, I think you're plenty likable. And it did not come out the way it was supposed to.
So, Nick, I wanted to ask you, do you think that apology or whatever was warranted?
No, he doesn't like her. He doesn't like her because, you know, he's in a tough race with her. Maybe he'll like her after he beats her or she beats him. The fact of the matter is likability has come about because we picked a guy in 2000 who we liked better than Al Gore. And look what it got us. Well, it's not supposed to be somebody you like. It's supposed to be somebody who can run the country. And that wasn't George Bush, as we can tell. And so I don't want about like and who doesn't like. Let's talk about that later. If you guys want to go to dinner, have a beer, whatever. But what I want to see when I see candidates talk is about issues and what they're going to do from day one going forward to make this country a better country and make the lives of Americans and those around the world better lives.
Well, this is trying to clean up the tension. I don't know, Jimmy, what do you think? You think he should have apologized?
Nah, I don't think so because, I mean, it's war. And in this acrimony between the two of them is not over by a long shot. I mean, supporters will continue to twist whatever hangnail they can until there's blood.
It's going to be dirty. It's going to be dirty.
It is going to be dirty. You know, but speaking of the candidates, you know, they head to Nevada to court the Latino vote. Now, A-Train, now, you and I both know Latinos are a diverse minority with, you know, different yet really specific needs. How should the candidates proceed?
Well, like I said last week on the shop, this election is not only historic, but it is going to revolve around one word, turnout, turnout, turnout. Both from a general election perspective and, you know, getting out minority votes, it's going to be essential for people in all camps to ensure that their people come out on caucus day.
Well, Congressman, what about you? Because you have a very diverse district.
The politics of today have got to focus around what we all need. You have to tailor your message two specific communities, but you can't tailor it so much that it sounds like you got different notes for different people.
If you're just joining us, I'm Michelle Martin, and you're listening to Jimmy Israel, Nick Charles, Congressman Keith Ellison, and Arsalan Iftikhar in the barbershop. Nick, I just have to get your take on this. This, you know, there's tragic news this week, and you know what I'm talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is very upsetting that Tracy and Eddie, Splitsville, after only 2 weeks. Give us some hope, man. You're kind of our pop culture guy, Nick. What happened?
You know, two people, long-term marriages, lots of kids, decide to jump back into an affair or jump back into marriage after the guy already has a kid with somebody else a year ago. It was ill-fated from the beginning. And I hope that, you know, I think they went to this union for Bora Bora or wherever the hell they went and decided, oh, God, let's get married. Let's profess our love. And the good thing about it, the smart thing, was that it wasn't legal. So they don't have to get a divorce. They don't have to get annulled. So all it took was a phone call from Tracy, hopefully saying, yo, man, I made a mistake. I think you did too. Let's be friends. Let's move on. I had them in the pool at 3 months, and I was hoping to win it, but I lost.
Okay.
I think celebrity gossip is kind of taking us all under. You know, I mean, we're all intrigued by the lives of the rich and pseudo-famous. But, yo, I mean, my whole thing with Eddie and Tracy is like, my man, good luck, because, you know, the shack up typically lasts so much longer than, or a special friend arrangement typically lasts so much longer than the marriage, you know. So I think we're going to see them be special friends for quite some time. And A-Train.
It makes me wonder how many special friends you have, Jimmy.
Don't ask me on the air, man. How are you going to do that?
I know.
Don't put me on a blast.
Why are we talking
like
to him about marriage?
I don't know, man. Michelle, we should have learned by now.
Why are we talking to Jimmy
if we want to talk about dreadlocks, he's the guy to go to.
But you're right. So Jimmy's a serial effect. What is it? Proof of Samuel Johnson's statement, the triumph of hope over experience.
Right,
that's our man.
Right.
What else you got, Jimmy?
Well, you know what? Juice, not just for sports stars anymore. Check this out. There are reports that some of our favorite hip hoppers and R&B artists are juicing up. Producer Timbaland, rapper 50 Cent, and former Fuji Wyclef Jean. Don't say it's so, Mary J. Blige. Are names that have popped up off an investigation from Albany County, New York. A-Train, what's up with that?
I mean,
why are people juicing up?
I'm still trying to figure out why Timbaland would need performance-enhancing drugs. We've all seen what Timbaland looks like, apparently.
Well, the steroids they're accused of using were human growth and hormones, and they typically lower fat content while they buff up the muscle content. And at one point, Timbaland was he was like over 300 pounds. He was pushing some weight, so he was trying to lose some weight, you know, for the album cover. So he might have had a really good reason to go on the steroids.
Well, let me just say that they all deny it. All those people either say it's not true, or so we got to, you know, put that part in there. But this is the same week that Congress started hearings on steroid use in baseball. And Congressman, I have sort of mixed feelings about it. On the one hand, I think, what's Congress's role in this? On the other hand, this is something where, you know, kids do kind of emulate what these folks do. So what do you think about all that?
Well, you know, I wondered that same thing about Congress's role. But I got four kids. All four of them are athletes. You know, three of them are boys playing football. So, you know, I am concerned about how athletes sort of set the tone for amateur athletes and kids. So I think Congress should figure out what's going on. We should have some clear rules about what is a controlled substance, what isn't. And I think we really need to look at how we hype sport so incredibly large. Yeah. You know, the Super Bowl's coming up, record amounts of money going to be spent on the commercials. And, you know, if you put that much money into something, people are going to do whatever they got to do to perform well. And, you know, where's the idea of sport and good, honest competition? It's lost.
It also, I sort of wonder about the fact that, and obviously, you know, I'm in the media too, so we are in the position of distributing information. But you've got all these people's names out in the public arena now. If they're doing something wrong, they should be prosecuted, right? Mm-hmm. If it's illegal, but if they're not, then they have to contend with the damage to their reputation.
Right.
And
the
I guess that's the part
opinion.
About it that bothers,
right.
it bothers
yeah.
me.
Right.
No, and then there's what's the defense of that? Then they have to continue to defend themselves. It wasn't a crime to look fabulous.
And a denial just doesn't work.
And that's the thing, you know, because we're all in the public domain, many times we see that people are found guilty in the court of public opinion before ever being found guilty of anything in the court of law. And sometimes that verdict of guilt in the court of public opinion is far more toxic.
And it bears mentioning that these steroids that these rappers and R&B artists were accused of using were not illegal.
That's true. But one thing I will say, though, is I think that a lot of people of color like to persuade themselves that they're not as obsessed with physical appearance as majority people are. Yeah. You know, we like to say that, you know, anorexia is not a black problem or black or brown problem and stuff like this. And I think if any of this is true, it does demonstrate that this kind of obsession with physical appearance is something
that
crosses
a human problem.
Cultural lines in the society and needs to be dealt with if that's the case.
You know what? You know what, Michelle? Author Jeff Chang, he wrote a book called Can't Stop, Won't Stop, the History of the Hip-Hop Generation. He said, commenting about this story, that, you know, in this kind of environment, your body is part of your brand. You know, it's not just your skills, mm-hmm. you know, but you're marketing a whole image. You know, when we're talking to our kids about this kind of stuff, I mean, because I saw the cover, you know, I know you're a big fan of hip hop, A-Train. I don't know about you, Special K, but
oh, yeah.
Check it. You know, I saw my dude 50 on the cover of The Massacre, and I mean, he looked unnaturally big.
Oh,
you know,
he jacked.
Yeah, and I was like, wait a second, you know, he hasn't been any time in jail. How did he get that big? You know, and what I'm wondering is, what do we tell our kids that are looking up to these rappers, even Mary J. Blige, and Lord knows women have enough problems with body image.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Body image, but without, you know, Mary J. Blige, you know, taking a human mm-hmm. human enhancement type
well,
stuff.
Well, again, I mean, we don't know. You know, to be accused,
allegedly,
not to
right,
be,
right.
Allegedly, to be allegedly. Guilty. So I think that's important to say. But
absolutely.
You're right. I think Mary J. is a role model because I think a lot of people appreciate the fact that she was an early success, that she has admitted the fact that she was heavy into the drugs, heavy into the alcohol, was not leading a healthy lifestyle,
right.
and the fact that she's managed to master
those
demons and still perform at a high level is something that's
absolutely.
Very inspiring. And her music has a lot of content to it.
Absolutely.
It's about some real things that a lot of people really are dealing with. So
there
is
no hateration in this dancery.
No,
tell you that much.
And she's hot. And she's hot now. Let's not forget that. All
but
right,
Jimmy,
well,
we don't have to worry about that with you because your body is your temple, right?
Well, I'm doing okay now. Don't start. I got a little tummy to lose, but I'm still in there.
Jimmy Israel joined us from WFSU in Tallahassee, Florida, where he is a freelance writer and reporter. Arsalan Iftikhar is contributing editor for Islamica magazine. He joined us from our studios here in Washington. Nick Charles is the vice president of digital content at BET.com. He joined us by phone from New York. And Congressman Keith Ellison represents Minnesota's 5th District. He was kind enough to also join us from our studios in Washington. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you, Michelle.
Yep.